Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on the exact same thing that, forget your name, was saying though. The Michelson-Morley experiment basically was there to show that there's no relative motion, there's no ether. So light was not moving relative to any kind of background medium.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, with the things that you said, in particular about space-time, space-time, what's the relationship between light and space-time? Is it moving relatively with respect to space-time?
Well, light is certainly moving with respect to time and space. That's how we gauge, it's not only its existence, but its changes from place to place in time. The fact that we think of space-time as being a field, gravitational field, sort of in our previous experiences working with fields, you know, we've had the electromagnetic field, but we've always described the electromagnetic field as a condition within space and time. So that's been comfortable. We do the same thing with the gluon fields and with the W fields. We can always determine their position with respect to space and time. But what we're saying about the gravitational field is that there is nothing with which you can gauge the gravitational field other than from within its own self, within its own corpus. The observations indicate that the gravitational field of the universe is not somehow embedded in some larger, you know, Newtonian construct that then gives coordinates that we can use to gauge the gravitational field. The gravitational field itself provides us with its own measurement. And that's a completely novel situation. You know, we don't have that experience with the electromagnetic field and with the gluon field or with the W field. Those can all be related to positions within space and time. So it is different, and it's not a new ether. If it is, it's, you know, you probably should use a different term, because the word ether not only is a chemical, you know, but it has the wrong historical connotations completely. Yeah.
I was going to ask the same question to Dr. Barr, so it's good for both of you. Is all that is, all that was, and all that will be contained in the universe in some state or other? Another piece of that might be when you stand on the bathroom scale, or when I do, is my energy field measurable? Is it attracted to gravity so that it makes the bathroom scale move?
Yeah, it's the ultimate vindication of E equals mc squared. Only a little bit of that m is something that you could recognize as matter that you could slow down and measure. The rest of it is energy. And you can measure energy in various ways, but one of the easiest ways is by its equivalent mass. And that's how you do it with the proton. You know, the properties of the gluon field have an equivalent mass you can measure. So, yeah.
I was tempted to quibble with some of your statements, but
okay.
I think the division into matter, fields, and is this on?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. The division between matter, fields, and space bothers me a little bit, mm-hmm. because, well, first of all, matter is not really a technical term in physics, though it's widely used, and in different contexts in physics it means different things. It's a slippery term. Really, I would say the correct way to think about things is that, as Weinberg, who quoted towards the end, that the fundamental stuff out of which everything is made is fields,
right.
And matter is just, or particles,
yes.
are just a manifestation of fields, mm-hmm. as are forces. Yeah. So really, the other thing is fields, there is a kind of loose distinction between matter and forces, which is, I think, what you're driving at. But both matter and forces are really, ultimately, can be thought of as fields and equivalently particles.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's a little uncomfortable. And a few minor things. The gluons don't have mass.
Okay, so far so good.
Okay.
I think we're both on the same page.
The Higgs field does give mass to a lot of different kinds of particles,
yep.
but not the certain particles.
Yep.
So photons don't get a mass,
yep.
and gluons don't get a mass.
That's right.
Okay. And there's a few other things. I did not quite understand what you meant when you said that if there were no, maybe I misheard you, if there were no energy around, or no energy in matter, that space-time would disappear. I don't think that's true.
If you look at Einstein's equation for gravity, if you take away basically sources of matter and energy on the right side of the equation, all you're left with is a flat space, which, you know, that's all. But apparently it's a bit more complicated than that, because it would presuppose that space-time pre-exists its sources, which are matter and energy. All right, so you get a causal problem there. That far as we know, gravitational fields are only produced by matter and energy. And so if the source term goes away, then your entire discussion of gravitational fields in space-time also is a problem.
No. So, you were right when you said that if there were no other stuff besides gravitation, no other energy, that the solution of Einstein's equations would be flat space-time.
Yes.
But that's still, you still do have space-time. Now, and you're also right to say that it's not quite true to say if you took away the sources of gravity that you would, you could take away the sources of electric fields, for example. The sources of electric fields are charged. But you could still have electric fields without any charge. It's a perfectly good solution to the equations of electromagnetism just to have a constant uniform electric field with no charges anywhere in the universe. So if you look carefully, it's true that charges are in a certain sense the source of electrical fields, but electric fields have a life of their own. Electromagnetic fields have a life of their own and do not require that there be charges anywhere. You can even have electromagnetic waves. In fact, I take back what I said a minute ago. Even without any source of any other mass or energy around, that's not the only solution of Einstein's equations is flat space time. You can have waves. You can have gravitational waves through space time without any other stuff around to act as their sources. I don't think it's really right to say space and time disappear if there's no
stuff.
That's
fine. I still like my way of thinking.
Maybe one more question.
Makes me feel good.
One more question.
Yeah.
This may seem trivial, but since you postulate that the beginning of the energy of the Big Bang was radiant, was light, do we need to be well concerned about the CERN discovery, that there may be some question about the speed of light?
The discovery on the neutrino speed and all that has been basically retracted. It turns out there was a calculational error in accounting for the transit time from the satellites for the time signal down to Earth. That was about 64 nanoseconds, and that was equal to the effect they were seeing. So Einstein is still fine. Now, the thing is that the nature of mass, as we understand it, that's one of the reasons why we have something like the Large Hadron Collider. It's really essential that we find the Higgs particle, because since 1968, that's been the mechanism by which fermions, which are basically quarks and electrons and neutrinos, gain their mass through the interaction with the Higgs field. If we don't find Higgs bosons at the mass range where we're expecting to find them, then we basically have to go back and rethink what's called spontaneous symmetry breaking, which has become kind of a keystone of contemporary field theory. There are other variants that do away with spontaneous symmetry breaking, but this is the simplest. And we've always had this idea that nature likes to do the simplest things first, and you know, probabilities for more complicated things are lower. So, you know, but the thing is that the Higgs field being able to do this only does it when the universe is cold. When the universe was extremely hot before the first trillionth of a second after the Big Bang, the Higgs field basically had the effects on masses of particles. It was still interacting with the particles, but there was no mass that was conferred by that interaction. Complicated thing having to do with the energy of the vacuum and things like that. So there's a period where basically you have maybe distinct fields that you could call electron fields and neutrino and quark fields back then, but they were all massless. And so massless fields in the mathematics, they have speed of light, So now we have populations of different types of radiant particles, if you want to call them that. And that's what the Big Bang sort of maelstrom was. Very high density, of course, but it was very radiant and very illuminated. And, you know, you didn't need reading glasses. You didn't need, you know, flashlights. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr.